Well, as you know, I mean, we need there's holes at the offensive line position. You can never have enough offensive line. Secondary is always a key position, you know, around the National Football League, and as you know, the passing game has become sort of the staple. You know, a lot of yards, a lot of attempts. So you need guys that can cover, and then you know you look at linebackers. I think that's always a key position because they're always getting, it's a physical game. Guys that can run sideline to sideline. And then probably, you know, for us personally, I think another one is getting some pass rushers. You know, with Jim Schwartz's style of defense, I think the pass rush is key to what he does on defense.
Doug, the rules changes on the chop block. How does that affect the run game?
It's just the way we teach now. I mean, it's going to affect the way we teach as coaches. And the onus is going to be on us. You know, the actual chop itself, you know, is... It's a nasty block, obviously, because it can hurt, and we do talk about player safety and but the onus now is going to fall on the coaches on how we teach.
You talked about pass rushers and outside linebacker. Do you have a sense yet of where Connor Barwin fits in, defensive end, linebacker? How do you see him fitting in?
I think Connor can be an exceptional, you know, defensive end, pass rusher, where he's comfortable. He's also been comfortable in space. He's done that before. With the style of defense they had, but his best position is coming off that edge, rushing that passer.
Is Marcus Smith going to be a defensive end as well?
He's going to go in, you know, as a defensive end. He's another one that has a lot of potential, and as coaches, we got to get the most out of that potential.
Why hasn't he realized that?
Well, I think you know, young players trying to feel their way in this league, trying to get an identity in this league. There's a confidence level in this league, and you know, I thought towards the end of the season, and some of the things that he did and has done, has really given himself a good opportunity going forward to continue.
What about Brandon Graham? I mentioned he was drafted for. Do you think that he could be in for kind of a breakout in that respect?
I think so. Brandon is a guy. He's a leader of the football team. He's energetic. He's high motor. Got great skill set. I think he's one that could really have a big impact on that D-line.
Jim Schwartz hasn't committed to any positions for players, but is Jordan Hicks big enough to play in the middle if that's where he ends up?
Yeah, I sure do. I think so. He, you know, it's a comfortable position for him. He's very he communicates well in there. You know, he's solid in there. So, yeah, I think he's got the right mindset, right size to fill that spot.
Is Najee Good considered a middle linebacker in this team, or can he play anywhere?
Najee could really play anywhere along there, but he's a guy that can run. He's athletic, great special teams player. You know, that what I would consider that will linebacker spot where you want guys that can cover out of the backfield, cover backs, cover tight ends. You know, really, I think that fits his skill set.
Is your starting left guard on the roster right now?
Yeah.
Who among those players?
Well, you know, Jason Peters and you know, Jason Kelsey and Bunch is in that group. I mean, you know, there's guys there that. In that guard position, without getting into, you know, the whole roster and where we're at, because nobody makes the team in March, but we do have guys that are capable of handling that spot, you know, and solidifying that spot. And then we did it with free agency. You know, Lane Johnson was a big priority, getting him back. So I think where we're at offensively, now we can focus on the draft, I think, and start filling those spots in.
You mentioned Peters. Would he be considered as a guard?
There's been talk about that, but by no means is he. You know, I think, in my opinion, I think he can still play left tackle, and that's where I want him to play. He's solid out there. He's got a lot of athleticism out there. And so I think that's his best spot going forward. Now, as he continues each year, I mean, is there a chance that he possibly can move inside? You know, that's yet to be seen.
What is the skill set required to go from tackle to guard?
Well, in his case, you know, he has the mobility, he has the size, he has the strength to come inside. You know, the biggest difference to me is, you know, a lot of those guards and really tackles that haven't really put their hand down. Now you kind of ask them to put their hand in the ground. It can be a little different. It's a little different viewpoint. Things are tighter. Guys are on you faster. And with his strength, it would suit, you know, it would suit him in there as well.
Do you feel the need, if, you know, assuming Lane moves over to left tackle after Jason retires at some point, do you feel the need in this draft to address who will take that right tackle spot when Lane moves over?
Well, I think you have to. I don't know if you can get as specific that way. I mean, as coaches, I mean, we evaluate our talent and we say, okay, this is a scenario. But as you go, you know, you want that versatility up front with your guys. You want guys that can play both guard positions or guard center, both tackle spots. But as we get down the road, maybe, you know, in a few years, you know, we'll see where that ends up. It'll be something that we definitely take a hard look at.
You know, I'm wondering, we were talking to Jeffrey Lurie yesterday, and, you know, you look at your team, and there's a lot of the core players who were here last year and have been here who we saw keep that core.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of the same players here. You have, obviously, a whole new coaching staff. So how do you take through philosophy of whatever it is, let's say offensively, superimpose that onto this group of players and say, okay, we can do this better, or we can be a better football.
You know, the one thing that this group has learned in the last couple of years is how to play fast. How to play fast. Tempo of the game. I think that's a benefit for any offense, is to be able to play fast. I want to use some of that. They're used to that. They're comfortable. The no huddle system. Give the quarterback a little more freedom to be able to do more things in, say, a 2-minute type mode. You know, that hurry up tempo.
That's not in the Andy Reid, Doug Peterson, DNA.
No, but I've always been intrigued by the tempo of the game. Now I know it's controlled by the. You know, the officials can control the tempo and the speed of the game. But at the same time, there's a time and a place for it. And then incorporating that with what I'm going to bring, I mean, we're gonna get in the huddle. We're going to, you know, break the huddle. We're going to attack the line of scrimmage that way also. But, again, there's a time and a place for the hurry-up. And you know, I look forward to utilizing that with what I bring.
Getting back to the offensive line for just a second, you talked about in one of your press conferences a while back about in Kansas City you had a very tough group, and that you sort of emphasized that as a character. Can you talk about that a little bit, about what do you look for in offensive linemen? What's important for you?
Well, you look for guys that are you want guys that can think on their feet, number one. You want guys that are athletic. You want guys that have that nasty, dirty grit to them. That no matter what happens during the course of the game or a season, you know, they're gonna take control. They're gonna take charge. You look for those types of guys, and then you can get a little more specific by position. But overall, those are the types of guys you want on your football team, and you know, guys that are versatile, guys that can play multiple spots, but. To me, you want those dirty guys, those nasty guys. I'm not saying they're cheap shot guys, but they're just, there's a demeanor about them that they're aggressive when they step on the field.
The Kansas City Chiefs with you and Andy together almost led the league and were mostly top five in the last few years rushing attempts offensively. But yet, when you look at some of the stuff that you do when you call plays, you like to attack the football field downfield. How do you strike that balance with this group of players, especially with Sam?
Yeah, this is a. I've personally, and everybody knows, I think, in the National Football League, you have to have the ability to run the ball, and you know, now with the zone read and with the RPO stuff, the run pass options that you're giving your quarterbacks. It looks like throws when they're really run calls. And it's just a way to attack defenses. So you know, going to continue to run the football. You have to run the football. Offensive line loves to run the football. You know, our guys in Kansas City, you know, you get in the course of a game and things are clicking along. And when they're asking for certain things, they're the ones out there playing the game. And you listen to that. So, you know, my style of run will be a little different than say, what Philadelphia did the last couple of years. Well, I thought that you know, Philly was a little more just a lot of traditional just the zone schemes, you know, inside and outside, pulling guards, pulling centers. Now, that I have all that in the offense, too. But I also like lining up with a fullback or a tight end in the backfield. I like having those situations, you know, because you're going to need guys that can lead block on Mike linebackers. You're talking about. You need guys that can run power and traps and gap schemes and you know, I like that style of running. I mean, that's kind of how I grew up in this league. You know, was with that style of running. So that'll be different.
So basically, yesterday talked about that new technology, RFID. Can you expand? That kind of caught us a little off guard. That's fairly new this year, and how's that going to?
It's new, but I can honestly say I haven't tried it on or used it, so I can't really comment on how it would affect the game or how it's going to affect me or anything like that right now.
As a follow-up to Sal's question, you mentioned fullback. Does that mean you anticipate carrying a fullback on the outside?
There's a chance. That's something I want to consider, you know, this offseason. You know, we carried one in Kansas City with Anthony Sherman, and I also want to be able to see how our tight ends can hold up because, you know, if you can utilize a tight end back there to do the same things, you know, it kind of frees up a spot. But I'm going to look at that hard this offseason as we continue to build the system.
Sounds like, too, you need a young ball carrier, too. It sounds like you need to draft a young ball carrier.
You're always looking, you know, you're always looking. I know this is a, you know, you can always pick one up middle to late in the draft. You can pick one up in free agency. You can pick one up at the end of the draft. But, again, you're still creating that depth at that position. So there is that chance that you pick one up.
Doug, this team has been struggling the last few years in red zone. What are the keys to being effective in the red zone offensively?
Well, you know, turnovers, field position, sacks, things like that. You know, down there when sacks, you're losing yards, your field position. You know, it's got to be an attack, aggressive mentality down there. The quarterback's got to be smart with the football. You have to take shots to the end zone. Defenses are, gosh, I mean, they're playing their field defenses all the way down to about the 12, 13 yard line, and they do make it a little bit harder because then they start blanketing and really covering that goal line pretty well, keeping everything in front. So, you know, you have to be smart. You have to still have that aggressive mentality down there.
You're covering just the combine, you know, D'Amico's gone. You know, will Jordan be ready to provide that kind of leadership? And do you need to have the leadership from the middle linebacker, or could it come from the safety?
Well, you know, the middle linebacker is usually setting the defense, also communicating with the safeties. With that communication, I think that Jordan has smart enough. He's going to understand the scheme. I know Jim has talked about this before, about how, you know, sort of simplistic his scheme will be. You know, keeping it fast for the guys and allowing them to play. But Jordan will be good. He'll be fine in there.
In your offense, do you think Jordan Matthews will stay in the slot, or do you anticipate him playing on the outside more?
I think he can play outside. I want to look at him outside this spring as we go through the offseason. And he can, you know, with his skill set, he can play both.
How surprised were you when you heard about the Tampa Bay?
Oh, I was surprised. You know, it kind of comes as a surprise, a little bit of a shock. But, you know, I don't know all the ins about it. so it's hard to comment completely on the whole thing.
Was it the severity of it that was surprising, or even the fact that they got hit like that?
Yeah, the severity was probably the most surprising, you know, of the whole thing.
Knowing Andy, the way you guys did things to have, was a part of the surprise also the fact that they got hit with it? I mean, the league is surprised. Does that surprise you too?
Yeah, you know, and again, I was there, I was working there, but I don't know what went down. I don't know all that, so it's hard to comment completely on what happened.
Does it open up like?
Well, it's NFL policy. I mean, you can't tamper, and it's a lesson for young coaches, obviously, and for everybody in the National Football League.
Is it an NFL
Football
policy
League.
That people actually adhere to?
Well, Doug, you got Matthews and Aguilar on the outside. Is that how you think you might start in the spring? Matthews and Aguilar on the outside.
Yes, yes, that's kind of how it looks right now.
Starting off running back.
Well, you got Ryan Matthews would be the guy. Darren Sproles. I mean, those two guys would fit that bill right now.
Doug, the off-season conditioning program begins in a few weeks, and you'll have a chance to address your team for the first time at some point here soon. Do you have a message crafted already? What do you anticipate saying to the guys the first time?
Can I tell you?
No, but I mean, what is the general?
Well, those are things that I've really thought about, you know, this past month. The biggest for me, the biggest message is just to capture the guys and just to, you know, show them a little bit of who I am in a small period of time, in a small window, because we have work to do that day, and I'm just looking forward to getting in there and getting a chance to meet all the guys for the first time and really face to face and get this thing going.
What sort of impact do you see from the three former Bills players, Nigel Bradham, Leotis, folks that you brought aboard, and the fact that they're going to be working with their former?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing is the fact that they're back with Coach Schwartz, and Coach Schwartz really knows them and understands them, and the type of athlete, the type of player they are, and how well they're going to fit in the scheme. They're all, you know, Nigel, Brooks, I mean, these guys are good special teams players. You know, they're going to be core special teams guys for you, and they're going to give you depth on defense.
What made Jim's defense so appealing to your system?
You know, going against him for so many years, it's an attack style of defense, and he's done a great job over the years, and he's developed pass rushers. You know, you look at guys like, Averill, you look at Sue, guys that were impact players for him in Detroit, and then even go, you know, Kyle Williams in Buffalo and Mario Williams in Buffalo and guys that can come off and really attack the passer. And that's what's intriguing, is when you can put pressure with four instead of five or six, and you don't have to blitz all the time, makes it a dynamic defense.
Doug, when you took the job, obviously Bradford was there, but he wasn't under contract. Did you take the job thinking, all right, this is going to be the quarterback, or do you accept him and say, all right, however it works out business-wise?
No, you know, I went in thinking he was going to be the guy. Honestly did. And you know, that was probably the number one thing that I did first and probably foremost when I got there, was evaluating that position and evaluating Sam's performance. And that's what led to him obviously wanting to stay in Philadelphia. I wanted him to stay in Philadelphia, and we got him signed.
When it comes to Nigel Bradham and then Michael Kendricks, for each of those guys, do you think you're better than strong side backer, weak side? What do you think those guys are?
I think Nigel can be on the strong side. Michael's he's a guy, again, he's that athletic guy. He can cover guys out of the backfield. He's a sideline to sideline guy, potentially a weak side backer.
How much has Sam been around during the past few months?
He was in for about a week, right there when he signed his contract. He came in for a couple of days and just got a couple of workouts in and signed his contract, did his press conference, and then he was back out.
Does he have to learn a lot of new verbiage with your offense?
Yes, I would say so. I know what he's learned the last couple, or really this past year, with the Eagles is very, very sort of simplistic as far as the calls go.
Yeah.
One word terms, maybe two or three words where, you know, the system I bring can be a little wordy at times,
yeah.
But we're always, again, I'm always finding ways. I'm working with Frank and John DeFilippo and the guys on offense, and we're really working to sort of streamline even what I've done, you know, in Kansas City and what we did there, you know, what Coach and I did there, and always looking ways to make it better.
I'm wondering, how does that helmet, the system where the new system where you can talk to the quarterback from the booth? So will the only one person be able to talk to the quarterback?
Only one person will still be able to talk to the quarterback.
So you'll be the play caller primarily on the field, so you'll be still on the field talking to Sam, so there won't be a change.
Right, and haven't worked through all that dynamic yet. I'll tell you the way it worked in Kansas City was Coach Reed would call it actually to me, and then I would call it into Alex.
Yes.
So you kind of go that way.
So you might go to Frank.
And so there's a chance that, yeah, might set it up that way where you go to Frank. Right now, I anticipate Frank being on the field. Yeah.
Doug, what do you like about Brandon Brooks? What are your expectations for him?
Oh, man, you know, a guy that can come in and really just, again, give us depth, you know, give us depth. A guy that with his skill set just makes us a better football team. I just think that the competition, you know, I've said this before, giving us competition at every position, And in his case, helps us really make us a better football team with what he can bring, you know, to our team.
Was he ticketed to start at right guard where he started in Houston?
Yeah, and he's such a big guy, you know, and putting him on that right side over there really helps solidify that side of the and working with Lane, you know, really I think the communication is going to be. With two veteran guys now over there that are still relatively young, makes it a solid right side for us.
Thank you.
How will Jordan handle the safeties? I mean, traditionally with the Eagles, it's been left and right and not strong and great. How do you do it?
Yeah, you know, that's something that you know, really you look at, you probably have to ask Jim on that deal, but, you know, a lot of times they're just right and left. And you know, both guys can play in the box. Both guys can play in the post. And communication. I think that's one thing that McLeod and Jenkins back there, their communication will be very, very good. I know McLeod's excited to be working with Jenkins back there, and you know, having that veteran, sort of that, you know, a Pro Bowl safety back there to work with is really exciting and intriguing for him.
When you got there and studied Sam, what was it about his skill set specifically that told you he'd be a good match?
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that makes good decisions. He's an accurate thrower. He's got a good arm. Can make all the throws that are necessary to the passing style of game that I'll bring. Leader of the football team, and just. Really gives you that a little bit of a, you know, a leg up on the things that I'm going to ask him to do, you know. We did a lot of things with Alex, utilizing one of his strengths was his mind, allowing him to think. Sam's that same type of quarterback, that the sharp guy that we can use, I can use, to get us in and out of situations, put more on his plate, so to speak, and he's definitely got that ability to do that.
Are you going to be on the road evaluating these quarterbacks in the next few weeks?
I am. I think it's important to evaluate all of them, you know, especially those top three, four, five, six guys, and really spend some time, you know, because you never know when somebody's a free agent, and you got to exhaust, you know, all the positions, and it's something that I look forward to doing, you know, here in the next couple of weeks.
Are you going to Carson Wentz's pro day tomorrow?
I won't be there tomorrow, no.
How about Paxton Lynch?
I won't go the pro days as much as I prefer the individual workouts, you know, where you can go a little more hands-on, one-on-one with the guy.
Do you like Sam's size right now? Are you looking to see if he can add some muscle or lean?
You know, it's one thing I think with where Sam has come. He's come a long way with his weight. Would you like to see a bigger guy? You would, just from the durability issues, you know, and the contact there. But it's not a concern, you know. It's not a concern. You know, he's actually put on a little weight this spring, so that's encouraging. He's put on a little weight this spring,
yeah,
through some of his workouts. And really, you think about where Sam again. This is going to be. You know, he missed a lot of off-season time last year because of rehab. So, you know, he's in a position now to really focus on the strength. Around 5 pounds.
Is there an ideal weight that you'd like him at, or you want that 10 or 15 pounds? I mean, is there?
No, I don't have a specific number, you know, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. You know, it wherever he feels comfortable, you know, with his weight and is okay with me.
How much input do you have on the defense with Jim there? How does it work?
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, I wanted to find the guy on defense, the defensive coordinator that I could trust, sort of that head coach on defense. And he's been that head coach, obviously, but now he's a guy that you can kind of turn the keys over to him and say, hey, this is your deal, because, you know, my focus, as you know, is going to be more on offense. But I'm intrigued by his philosophy. I'm going to, this spring, as we start diving into the X's and O's with our players, is really get a little more involved with what he's doing on that side of the ball. And being in this position now as a head coach, it allows me to kind of bounce around and see that side of the ball a little bit more, because I really haven't, you know, as you know, being a coordinator, you're focused on offense, or if you're the quarterback guy, you know. So this really gives me that ability to really understand his style and you know, gives me that freedom, I guess, in the spring to do that.
Did Andy share with you how helpful it was to have Jim Johnson when he came to Philadelphia, to have Jim running the defense?
Yeah, it was very, very helpful. And he expressed how important it was to find that guy that you trust on defense.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that Jim Johnson was a blitzing defensive coordinator, so was Sutton. And Schwartz, you know, is just send the floor.
Right.
Not
right.
Blitz a lot.
Right.
So why did you choose that path?
I just think I was very intrigued by not saying he doesn't blitz, because he does blitz. You know, he's been labeled, you know, he's the wide nine. You know, the defensive ends are in the wide nine technique. He's been able to develop pass rushers with four guys. He'll get in and out of bare fronts. He'll play his cover ones. He'll bring five at times. His style, to me, was rush four, cover with seven, makes it a lot harder than maybe blitz five, fire zone, and give up a spot. And quarterbacks today, and the style of passing, look at say New England, for instance, and their passing game. It's just, you know, balls out of his hand. It's out of Tom's hand. So these quarterbacks are smart today, and they're coming in and understanding, you know, blitz packages and understanding where open zones are, and they get the ball out of their hand so fast. And so the blitz sometimes doesn't affect you. Our guy in Kansas City got the ball out of his hand relatively fast, and the blitz didn't really affect him. So do you have to blitz? Yeah, you have to blitz. But if you can just do it with four, that's what intrigued me about Jim.
Did Jim talk a little bit about, you know, that maybe you'd like a little bit more blitz than he normally brings? Have you
We haven't got to that point yet, because he's installing his defense and I'm installing our offense right now as we go through this off season. So we're not at that point yet.
You mentioned that Brandon Brooks is, after he got signed, that he was a bigger than normal right guard, but you just like him because of his production. Do you expect that, or do you prefer a left guard that's also bigger than a prototypical size, or does it just?
Brandon's just gifted with size, you know. You don't go out necessarily looking for mass that way, especially at the guard position. But, you know, he's very capable of the things that we do, athletic enough, runs extremely well. But, again, he's that guy that fits that mold of working with that center. You know, Houston did a great job of zone schemes as well, you know, combo blocks, things like that, and he's good at that, and he's a road grader in there, and that's something that will be a little more of a comfort for Jason Kelsey in there.
These players during the past 3 years were accustomed to a different schedule than most NFL teams. You know, off Monday, that was popular with some, unpopular with others. What's your preferred schedule, and are you bringing the day-to-day of what Andy can do?
Yeah, you know, my whole career, it goes back to when I was a player in 1995 in Green Bay with Mike Holmgren. It's very structured as far as, you know, you can tweak your Mondays and Tuesdays. But we came in the building on Mondays, Tuesdays off, and it was a normal week from there. Last couple of years in Kansas City, we gave the players Monday off, brought them in on Tuesday for a couple hours, and then a normal week from there. So I lean more towards that schedule. I think it's important that they have a day off, particularly, you know. And listen, these players are coming in every day. I mean, they're coming in on Mondays, and they're getting their workouts in. Even though it's not required, they're watching the game tape. You know, they're making their corrections on Monday, even before we get to them on Tuesday. So, but that's the schedule that I'm leaning towards right now, is off on Monday, come in on Tuesday, and then have a normal week Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from there.
Practicing Tuesday or
no, just meetings. Yeah.
So you played, talked about before, you played behind a few really good quarterbacks in your career. When you play behind guys like that, what have you been able to take from each of them when you coach quarterbacks now in your coaching career?
Those experiences, you know, just with my time in Kansas City working with Alex, I think it's important that you know, if you're gonna talk the quarterback position, having played it, stood behind the center, you know, stared down those pressures, stared down, you know, that coverage, that rush, and then watching guys like Dan Marino, Brett Favre, you know, had a chance to even play with, you know, Bernie Kosar, Jim McMahon, guys have had a lot of NFL games under their belt, and I'll tell you this, the one thing that's consistent with all of them is their mentality and how physically and mentally tough they are. As quarterbacks, and I think it's important that you relay that to your guys today, that they have a certain mindset, they're a certain leader, they come in and they lead by example. They don't have to be a rah-rah guy, but they come in and lead by example, and how they study, how they prepare, and being able to watch those guys for so many years get themselves ready for game day.
Doug, what is the, from just time management, job overall, the biggest kind of early difference coordinator to head coach?
The time management, you know, because now you're dealing with the business side, you know, as well, and putting your schedules and calendars together, and those are things that for me now were different, and so being able to manage that time to still be able to get the football in, because still a ball coach, and you still want to be a ball coach, and just finding those times during the day that you can get that work in, but at the same time balance the business side has been the biggest challenge so far.
As far as training camp, the Eagles have scrimmaged with other teams the past 3 years, or at least a joint practice. Uh-huh. Is that something you want to do, or you're against it?
I'm interested in it. I think this first year, though, I would stay away from it. And just from the fact of being the first year, let's do this thing, you know, get it done right the first time, and let's have our first training camp under our belt. That's kind of where I'm leaning right now. I'm not opposed to doing something, but I think as you go, I think it is good to get with other teams. It's a break for your players. It's an opportunity to go against somebody else, you know, when you're in those dog days of training camp. Yeah.
The NFL proposed several rules yesterday in the past, and we're talking about more today. Are there any rules or changes that you like to see in the game that, you know, aren't on the docket this year?
No, and that was part of, I think part of, for me, this whole process with these meetings this week was just to get a feel for everything and just hear it firsthand and see kind of how this process goes, and you know, some of the rule proposals and changes and things like that. As long as they benefit our game and they're not adding to our game, I'm all for those.
So what were your evaluations on Nelson Aguilar in Kansas City prior to the draft last year?
I liked him. He was a receiver that I studied, you know. I thought he had a great skill set, size, strength, speed, smart kid, sharp, all the things that came true when I had a chance to, you know, talk to him, you know, and just introduce myself to him, you know, this spring. So I'm looking forward to working with him.
With the draft in Kansas City, how much involvement did you have?
You know, if it was a time where maybe we were leaning towards an offensive pick, I was really working in my office. I was getting ready for you know, a mini camp coming up, or working on training camp, or watching tape, or doing those things in my office. And then if we got to a point where we felt like it was an offensive pick, then I got the call to come down and give my opinion on a guy. And that was basically my extent of the draft.
What's your opinion of the corner box on the roster?
I actually feel really good about our corner position. There's some youth out there with some experience, and that's key, you know. And these guys, I tell you, I'm excited to watch these guys actually, you know, get out there against our receivers and work this spring. I know we can only do certain things, but I like where we're at with that position. Still probably need to add some depth over there at that position, but where they are is, and who we have, I like.
In that first minicamp you get before the draft, that new coaches get, what are you going to be looking for in particular to kind of shape your opinions going into the draft?
I just want to. It's going to be different, because I remember our time in Kansas City where, you know, they're learning the offense, they were learning the defense. You want to see who can process the information, number one. But at the same time, you know, you're just looking for those emerging leaders of your team. You're looking for the guys that effort's not going to be an issue. Hustle's not going to be an issue. The evaluation process is going to be more on how well they pick up the information, to be quite honest with you. It's not until we get into really the OTA phase three part, that you're really going to be able to see the improvement from that first camp to, say, those OTAs in that last camp. But and again, with the way the offseason is set up with rules and stuff, it's kind of hard to really get a gauge of where everybody's at, because if you're going to play bump and run cover one, well, you know what? You can't bump and run in the offseason. You can't be physical that way. So, you know, it'll be hard, but at the same time, who can pick up the information the best?
So with your corners, with the technique you're playing up front, I mean, does it put a little bit more pressure on them to be able to tackle other corners and the safeties and be able not just to tackle, but the track guys?
Yeah, you know, the tackling corner is somebody you want to find. With so much of the, you know, as mentioned earlier with the run-pass option game, these corners have to have the ability to tackle and tackle well, especially in space. And that's something that we look for and feel like we've got a couple of guys out there that can tackle.
When you look at Jason Kelce, what happened to him as you look at how he played, how teams may have attacked him last year?
Well, you know, there were times where he was by himself a lot, and it's hard, you know, it's hard in there. There were times when maybe he just, you know, just a physical error where he maybe, you know, because he's so smart and he's so athletic that sometimes you can be too fast and you can get out of the front of a defender and get beat that way. I think with the addition of Brandon Brooks, it's going to help sort of kind of keep him, I think, a little more solidified in the middle. And you know, as you saw with the free agency that we did, I mean, that was a need. That was an area of need for us, and because of the things that Jason was exposed to up front, and just feel like he's going to have a great year with having, you know, two solid guys next to him.
We've asked you a lot about Andy in the past, but what other coaches or what coach has had a huge influence on your coaching philosophy outside of Andy?
You know, I go back to my days in Green Bay with Mike Holmgren. I think that was kind of where everything started for me, you know, down this path. I even think of the times in Miami down here with Don Shula and how he just led his football team. You know, he was maybe not so much later in his career was he the X's and O's as much as just, you know, being the leader, being the motivator, being the guy that stood up in front of the team every day and addressed the team and got the guys ready to play. And then, honestly, I mean, there's a lot of guys in this room, you know, a lot of guys yesterday in this room that have been mentors, guys that – it's a great group. I mean, it's a great group of head coaches, and they've all been more than gracious to, hey, if you ever need anything, you know, don't hesitate to call, because there's a lot of experience in these rooms.
When you haven't been an NFL coach of any sort all that long, how did you know you were ready to be a head coach?
You know, you get into this business to be the best football coach that you can be. Would I have been happy to be the best offensive coordinator in Kansas City? Yeah, I would have been. But I also know that me personally, I felt like the last 3 years and being around and being around Andy and the things that we've done, the discussions that we've had, really starts getting your mind going in the direction of head coach. And, you know, I it's funny, but I even go back to my high school days when I was the head coach at Calvary, and I think about those days and what made me a, you know, why did you want to be a head coach just in high school? I loved teaching the game. I loved watching the guys perform. That part of it never changes. You know, that part of it never changes. And I just feel like, you know, having the relationship with the players is key. I feel like I can connect with the players. They can connect with me. I've been in the locker room before. I understand that dynamic and how that works. And then just these experiences these last couple of seasons, you know, in Kansas City has really put me in this position.
To have that first NFL head coaching job in place, that you know people in the organization, you know the neighborhoods for your kids to go to school, you know the subway, what does that mean to you?
It's really has made the move back to Philadelphia probably the easiest of any of the head coaches in the National Football League, any other cities in the National Football League for me. This was an ideal spot, you know. There's such a comfort level knowing that your family's going to be taken care of. Going right back into a school system that your son has friends and, you know, teachers that he knows, and, you know, my wife has, you know, friends back in New Jersey and Morristown area, and it's such a refreshing feeling to know that they're going to be taken care of coming back into a city where not only as a player but I've coached before.
When you were here with Andy, he believed in training camp for at least like a week period of just, you know, complete full pads, live tackles to the ground. Will you be doing that too?
You know, I think there's a time and a place, and you know, there's been a lot mentioned about tackling, you know, in high school, college, and even in the National Football League. I think the only way you can really work on tackling is live periods in training camp, and I think you got to have a few of those. You got to be in pads because the run game is a physical sport. You got to be in pads. You got to be able to bang. You got to be able to do those things that necessary, because I feel like the harder you work in your early training camp days and really all through training camp will pay off for you late in the season. I'm a big believer in that. And so I guess to answer your question, I will have a few live periods in training camp.
As a follow-up to something you said earlier, you said in Kansas City, the way it's structured was that Andy would give the play to you and then you give it to Alex, and you might do that here. Why is that more effective than you just giving the play the same?
Because with the head coach's headset dynamic, you're on the offense, you're on the defense, and you have the quarterback communicator. Sometimes it's easy. You don't know sometimes the buttons. I mean, you know, I had offense, and we had two channels on offense, and then I had the quarterback, you know, coach to quarterback communicator on my belt pack. And a lot of times I can just see the dynamic right now as a head coach, because you're going to want to be on the defensive side of the ball, and you got all these buttons going on, and you don't want to mess that up. And Andy felt comfortable that way. He wanted to hear, because here's the other thing about it is, whose voice are they listening to the most in the meetings during the week? They're listening to more of mine, because I was the one actually calling plays in practice. So if Frank, for instance, is calling the plays in practice, that's the voice that they hear. They don't want to hear a different voice on Sunday. And so that's the other dynamic to this whole thing is who are they listening to, along with the mechanics of all the buttons and everything on your headsets.
Coach, if you were not a football coach, what kind of career would you want to choose?
If I was not a head coach, wow. Not a football coach at all. I have a degree in business, you know. I've always been intrigued with construction, architecture, and I love the design of buildings. Some of these buildings, even around here, I feel like that would be a nice path to go down if I weren't doing the football thing.
I know you don't have the guys in the room yet, but how involved will you be daily, as far as the defense?
Well, daily I'm going to be more with the offense from a meeting standpoint. On the field, however, I'll spend, you know, half my time with the defense, half the time with the offense. You know, but the majority of my time is going to be in the quarterback room, you know, putting my stamp on that position.
So having Jim Schwartz, is that kind of a lot easier?
For sure. For sure. Yeah.
So with that said, are there things you have to do to make sure that the team has a united front and it doesn't end up being an offensive team under you and a defensive
right.
team under you?
Exactly. And the thing is, for me, is that balance of spending time over on the defensive side, spending time with special teams, showing the players that you're not just stuck on offense. And I think that was something that, you know, take away from Coach Reed was the fact that he could do it that way, you know, and embracing both sides of the football and uniting the football team that way.
How should a player look at you? How does she feel about the head coach?
I think it's someone he can come to at any time. It's almost like you don't want to say a father figure, but you know, it's like your son going to your dad. You want to be able to have that relationship where he can come to you at any time. I also want him to see me where somebody that's played the game, you know, somebody that understands the dynamic of the locker room, somebody understands the dynamic of practice and what it takes to win a championship being on Green Bay's Super Bowl team. You know what it takes to get there, and you know I want him to be able to see those things in me.
Jeffrey Lurie said yesterday that you find if they're a quarterback in the draft, do you expect to come out of the draft with another quarterback?
I do. I think that you have to continue to grow your roster. The only way you can create depth is a lot of times through the draft. So I feel like we can find our third that way.
Is that an option at number 8? Is that something you'd consider?
Oh, I don't know about that, but I know that you know, if you're looking for that third quarterback, then there's some good ones in this draft, you know. Taking out the top three, there's still some guys in there that you can develop and would be good fits at a number 3.
After those top three, how many of them do you like?
Well, I'll tell you this. I'll have an opportunity after these meetings are over, once I get back to Philadelphia, to really start diving in again, you know, now that the combine's over, and going back and really evaluating that position again. Maybe taking a couple of trips and going to work some guys out and just gathering a lot of information, you know, on everybody. But there are a few guys that I still like that could be good number 3s.
Doug, as you look at the dynamic in your quarterback room, first of all, is it fair to refer to Sam as the one, Chase as the two right
yeah,
now?
Yes.
So is there any issue that arises from the fact that Chase has been with you before, he knows your scheme, maybe players at times are going to go to him with questions about the offense instead of going to Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I view Chase as another coach for me on the football field. I think he's got a great understanding, having been with him for 3 years, really knows the offense. I mean, he could literally step in and call plays tomorrow, you know, and I think that helps, not only helps him, but it helps him with the rest of the guys on offense, and it's going to help Sam. It's going to help Sam kind of sort of speed up his learning process with the offense and picking up terminology and understanding reads and progression. So for me, that's a little bit of a security. It's a lot like when Andy brought me in 1999 to Philadelphia and drafted Donovan. And it's that same dynamic. You know, somebody that knows your system, somebody that can teach that quarterback and the other offensive players on the team the offense.
But here you got two veterans, though. What I'm saying is there anything, just from developing a leadership perspective, if Chase becomes the guy that everybody goes to and not Sam, at least on the short term?
I could see that happening, and you know, nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you understand your role, you understand your position on the football team. Everybody's in this for one common goal, and that's to win games. No egos involved. You check those at the door, and that's the message from day one. And I think early on, yeah, guys will probably sort of gravitate towards Chase just because he does have knowledge of the system. I mean, that's just a natural, thing.
When you were in Green Bay as a quarterback, and there was a run there where the Packers were drafting the quarterback almost every year in the draft, how do you think that made Brett Favre feel? Do you think it made him better knowing that they were bringing in competition?
I don't think it made Brett Favre. He didn't think about it one bit. And honestly, if you're the starter, who cares? Who cares? Why are you looking over your shoulder if you're the starter? You know what I mean? And that's the way Sam has to approach this, you know, even with Chase there. And even if we go out and draft a quarterback this year, if you're the guy, you're the guy. You're looking forward and not behind. If you're constantly looking behind you, then we're going to have problems.
Because the reason I ask is, when Chase Daniel had his press conference, you know, he said when he was in New Orleans, he went up to Brett Favre and he told him every day, I'm coming to take your job.
Drew Brees?
Yes, Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, in New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know, and he said he'd do the same thing with Sam. I mean, do you kind of like
It's friendly fire. You know, it's motivation. It's competition. You know, I've talked about that a little bit with these guys, with every position on the team. And why not? Confident guy. If you're that confident, you know, you'll prove it on the field, you know.
Doug, how does
structure set up in terms of personnel, the communication between you, Howie, are you communicating with Howie? Is it one of the guys that you talk to daily?
It's just been Howie and I, you know, and his staff has been the open dialogue, open communication so far this spring.
Has Howie been open to taking your suggestions?
Yes. Yes, he has. He hasn't made of the moves we've made this spring, whether it's signing our players or the free agents we've brought in or the movement that we've done, he's always come in all those situations. He's come to me, and we've had dialogue, we've had conversation, and he's asked my opinion in all those situations.
Do you like that better, just being you and him talking, as opposed to being like an intermediary, or there being like three guys?
I like it that way. However, right now too, if there's a situation where we need to pull Jim Schwartz in, I'm going to pull him in. I mean, I'm going to exhaust every resource that I have to make sure that we're doing the best for the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah.
Those conversations are daily?
Just about. I wouldn't say they're daily, but they're frequent.
How do you feel you've been as a talent evaluator in the times that you've done reports and looked at these college kids over the years?
Pretty good. You know, I've really evaluated a lot the quarterback position over the years, and some of the guys that I've liked, had good reports, good things to say, have all had pretty good NFL careers so far. They may not be with us currently, but they've had good careers, I evaluated Alex Smith when I was with Philadelphia before, you know, when he became a free agent at his first time, and always felt like it, you know, he was a guy that if he ever got a chance, and we had the chance in Kansas City, we went out and got him, and I feel good about that.
Is it exciting to know that your voice will be more heard now? Maybe it was more in Kansas City than
yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that now that, you know, this becomes your team, you know, you got to answer the questions about your team, and so you want to make sure you're right, you know, 100% of the time.
What mistakes did you make early on in your coaching career that ended up benefiting you? You were able to learn from them and apply them later on?
I know this. The one thing I think that I did, maybe not a mistake, but it might have just been doing too much too fast in Kansas City, trying to put too much offense in. I think that we eventually, when I say we, you know, Coach and I and the offensive staff, we eventually streamlined the offense a little bit more, pulled back a little bit, kept it a little more user-friendly, so to speak. So I think that has really benefited me now going forward as to how much offense you really need to have.
You might have been already asked this, but ball control, will that be important to you? Or, you know, clock,
time of possession. I think it's something you look at the end of the day. I know during the course of the game, you're not necessarily concerned with time of possession. I think sometimes too, as you game plan, you kind of know what their offense or defensive structure is on who you're evaluating. And so you may go into a game thinking, okay, this might be one of those games where we might have to control the clock just a little bit more. We might have to use the run game a little bit more. But, you know, I don't think you go in saying, hey, we got to get X amount of, you know, the time of possession factor doesn't really come into play quite as much.
Doug, this is your first NFL meeting. What do you take away from these few days?
I tell you, it's been great to really, number one, one-on-one with the coaches and get a chance to meet them and talk to them and bounce some ideas off each other. And the other thing is just the interaction of the whole process, you know, from you know, the commissioner's messages to us as a league, to the breakouts, to you know, listening to the rules proposals and bylaws proposals and sit in on some of these meetings. There's a lot of information, a lot of information, and it's good information. And it's all about making our game better, and that's what we're all in this to do, is to make our game better. So that's been the biggest thing I've taken away.
Is there a significant difference in kind of the scope of what the league is when you sit in a coordinator's chair versus the head coach's chair and experience these kind of events?
Oh, yeah. Because even as a coordinator, you're not exposed to the information that's here. And you don't get to hear necessarily what the commissioner's messages are all the time. But now being in this type of setting, you really get a bigger perspective on how healthy and how strong our league is and the direction in which, you know, direction in which we're going. Don't have one necessarily penciled in. I know, you know, Parkey's coming off the injury and good young kicker, so you know, we got to see where he's at and evaluate him this spring.
When you looked at the film of the Eagles' offensive line last season, what did you see? What stood out to you?
There were free runners on the quarterback. There were, it goes back to what Dave, you were asking earlier about, you know, Jason Kelce. I mean, there were times where he was left on an island for whatever reason. Now, you know, it's hard to get into a lot of the scheme stuff because I didn't know and I wasn't here, but just looking at it on film, those are some of the things that I saw, that just some inconsistency there. Guys were on different levels. Something that we have to definitely address and clean up, you know, this spring.
Different talent levels?
No, guys on different physical levels.
Oh, okay. They, you know, would be 3 yards.
Yeah, just there. Different things like that that just created some space in there, you know, for D linemen, linebackers to attack those gaps. And, you know, it's something that, you know, working with Jeff Stoutland and you know, he's aware of all that. And, you know, we're looking forward to just fixing that and cleaning it up and getting better in that area.
I'm sorry if you were asked this earlier. You probably were, but all the moves you guys made in free agency, just kind of like your thoughts on them. Do you think you addressed pretty much all of your needs or still others?
Yeah, you know, the key positions, I felt like that, you know, we got better. We created some depth, secondary, linebacker, offensive line, quarterback position. You know, guys and then just signing our own players, too. You know, getting our own guys back, I think, has been has really put us in a good position now going into the draft.
What do you think you still need to address?
Well, I think you still have to address offensive line. I think, again, it goes back to you can't really never have enough O-linemen. And you like versatility at that position. The other thing is the secondary. You still want to, you know, be able to address the secondary, possibly the safety position again, whether you can pick one up in the draft, a young safety that you can begin to teach and mold. And you want guys that you can begin to develop. You know, the youth of your roster, you develop those guys because those are going to be your next wave of starters. So you want to continue to keep building from underneath. That's the strength of your program. And as long as you continue doing that and signing your own guys, puts you in a good position.
Do you think you'll use Zach Ertz or maybe even Brent Celek similar to how you use Travis Kelce in Kansas City?
Yeah, I do. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I really like our tight ends. I like the athleticism there. It's a good group, great group. You know, you got the veteran in Brent, and, you know, he can still play and he still gets open. And, you know, primary tight end, Zach is athletic, young. You know, he's like Brent was when he first came in, you know, and a lot like Travis Kelce, you know, that way. And you got Trey Burton and... I mean, there's guys there that I'm excited to work with this spring. And you know, we use a lot of three tight end sets in Kansas City. And I want to see how these guys really fit into that system.
I'm sorry if you've been asked before, but fullback, I mean,
You know what? I like the fullback position. It's a position that we want to evaluate, you know, this spring. I know there's not necessarily a fullback on the roster right now. We had one in Kansas City. Sort of on assignment to find one. I like the fullback position, and if we can have one on the roster that can also be a four-core special teams guy. That's probably his primary role, you know. What was the second part? He's somebody that I want to look at there, you know, this spring. I want to see if he can handle that. I don't know that answer yet without actually physically putting him in that position. The other thing, too, is, you know, there's no blocking and protection schemes and all that kind of stuff in the spring, and you really have to wait till training camp to really know if he can hold up back there.
Doug, is there anything from your days working on Moreno that you take and you apply to coaching?
How he interacted with people?
Anything at all.
You know what? He was so good at making the guys around him better by whether he got in somebody's face, you know, whether he pulled him off to the side, you know, and did his one-on-one tough love speech. He was always coaching, basically, is what he was doing. I mean, he and I think that's the thing that I most take away from guys like him, is the fact that you never stop coaching. You're always giving them, you know, what can I get better at today? And he was good about that. He was good about working with his receivers. The next day they'd come out and work on something else. The next day it was something else. And then you get into the games, and he just had that natural ability to make those guys that much more better on game day, you know? And I think as a coach, that's our job. Our job is to make those guys better, and we have to make our guys better. And, you know, you just never stop coaching.
I know his favorite story.
What's that?
Favorite story of mine that you can share live microphone.
Well, he was never – he liked to call his own plays, you know. And back then we didn't have the coach to quarterback communicate. There was a lot of hand signals and things like that. But there were several times where we would send in the play – and you'd get the old wave off with him. Like, I don't want that play, you know? And he'd call his own stuff. I mean, those are things that he just did, but he knew his system so well that it didn't really matter because you knew the play was going to be a success.
I know it can be kind of hard to predict. Last question, several months
ago. And the Meadowlands game. The fake.
Last question. I know it can be kind of hard to predict several months out, but do you expect to use Darren Sproles offense that it has been the last couple years, at least from what you've
seen on film? I do anticipate using him. He's a tremendous athlete, great skill set, and so yes, I do plan on using him quite a bit. Okay.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, guys.